Welcome, everybody, to the Deep Thought Podcast. My name is Yusuf, and today, joined with me, is Sirk.
Yo, yo, yo.
And Umit.
What's up?
So, as you guys can already tell, it's just the three of us. The other guys couldn't make it. Some of them are busy. Some of them don't really care anymore. So, screw them, you know? No, I'm just messing. Anyways, so today's topic is a favorite of mine, and I'm sure it's also a favorite of Sirk's.
Right.
It's going to be about space. And more specifically, it's going to be about space colonization and where us as humans, as a civilization, realistically, how we'll get to that point in the space colonization and the issues with it, just the logistics and all that kind of jazz. So I'm just going to be kind of leading the discussion, and I'm going to start off by just naming really the two big organizations that are in the forefront of space colonization, and that is NASA, partnered along with SpaceX, and also Blue Origin, which is an Amazon company. Well, you probably can't really call it an Amazon company. It's more of a Jeff Bezos-funded company, and these two companies have been working in developing different space technology, mainly rocketeering right now, because that's really the biggest issue, just trying to get up into space in the most fuel efficient and most cost saving way. And so SpaceX has obviously, I don't know if you've seen the news at all recently, but they've been successful in a lot of their rocket launches and having them land back down without any serious damage. So the reusability has just increased dramatically over the years. And obviously, when you can reuse something, you're going to save on a lot of money, because you don't have to rebuild any destroyed parts, any destroyed rockets, which costs hundreds of millions of dollars.
Do you know what they did differently to make these reusable versus every other ones we've used up until this point?
What's that?
Like, for the rockets, what did they do differently that made them reusable as opposed to all the rockets we used before?
Oh, are you asking me specifically?
I'm asking if you know.
Trying to give your own tidbit. I mean, it's just really the engine system that they're using, because the way that they had the – they didn't, because NASA before and other space organizations, they didn't really plan for a re-entry with their original rockets. So they would literally have it where – like, if you ever see like any of those the space movies, or if you ever seen like an actual launch of a spacecraft, you would see the different parts of the spacecraft detach at different levels in the atmosphere. And those are all the rockets and boosters. But if you see the launches for any of the SpaceX, I don't know if Blue Origin has succeeded in this yet, but they are getting very close. And so if you notice in the videos, they go up out into space with their original boosters, and then they might shed some weight just to get out into orbit. But then when they're coming back down, they still retain the main engines. So they pretty much just reserve a lot of their fuel still. And then when they're coming back down, they just they use that to slow their the landing.
Gotcha.
That's pretty much how they succeeded in doing so.
I think it kind of like kickstarted a lot more motivation for space travel, because there was like a time period where, you know,
definitely,
people were just like a little stagnant. Or, I mean, like the, you know, organizations were a little stagnant with, you know, launching rockets and stuff like that. And they even canceled, like, you know, the space shuttle program and all that.
I mean, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I mean, it's so expensive. That's why.
Right.
And, like, what do you get in return from launching the ship, right? You don't make a profit whatsoever. It's all sunk costs at this point.
Yeah, exactly. So ever since, I mean, like I said, still very, very recent, but with SpaceX's success in reusing their rockets, a lot of companies, a lot of companies are going to be using this technology or something very similar to either, you know, make their way into space tourism, or even more of a practical use nowadays would be to have satellites sent up, and that if they need some sort of repair, if like, I don't know, other debris hits their satellite and they need to repair it, they can have it just come back down. They have it land safely, do some repairs, and then send it back up without having to rebuild a completely new satellite for probably even more than double the cost, probably triple, quadruple the cost of if they were to reuse it or just repair it. So moving on. So we have the reusability of our rockets. Makes it more practical for us to go into space and then come back down unharmed. And so right now, a lot of these programs, especially NASA and SpaceX, they have their eyes on either Mars or Moon. And well, NASA specifically wants to go onto the Moon. SpaceX wants to go to Mars, as per Elon Musk. He always talks about colonizing Mars and different ways that we could achieve that. He already has his car. I mean, I don't think he sent it anywhere specific. He's just shot it out to outer space. Did he send it to Mars?
No, it was just.
Just like release an update on like the condition of the car or something recently? I thought I saw something like that, but I didn't click on it.
Possibly. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they still have like some sort of like network connection to the car that gives you like live feed of like how the car is doing.
Sounds like an Elon thing to do.
Yeah, I know, right? But so I think it'd be interesting to see how NASA and SpaceX further their, you know, mission. Because like I said, Elon wants, he has his eyes set on Mars. And NASA really wants to colonize the Moon. And so I don't know if that might create some sort of like, tension between the two. Possibly splitting up. I really don't see them splitting up at all. I don't think they would because they're so beneficial to each other. But I feel like the most realistic one at this point is really the Moon because, one, they're very close to, it's very close to Earth.
Relatively.
Relatively closer. It's it will save us on a lot of resources. So because of the time that it takes, you know, we would have to send a rocket going to Mars with so much more resources because they're going to be on a longer trip and there and back. And then the Moon, since it's closer, obviously you need a lot less. And I feel like the Moon at the same time is something that we've observed a lot more and we have a lot more data on. For starters, we've already been to the Moon, so we kind of have like a bit more of an understanding on how we can really achieve doing that once again. Yeah, and at the same time, the Moon does have a lot of sun time as well. It's 14 days of sunlight, which is very beneficial if they were to go to, or if the colonization was to stick with solar charging for their facilities. But there is other alternatives. Go on.
Yeah, there's this really interesting book. It's fictional, but it actually like it kind of makes an interesting point. With like space colonization, like it's thousands of years in the future from today. Basically, humans in that world colonized the Moon first and used the Moon to colonize the rest of the solar system because it's more fuel efficient because there's no atmosphere. There's not as strong of an atmosphere pulling you to the surface, so it's easier to launch from.
Well, you mean gravity. Like,
gravity, yeah. And so there's less gravity to like pull you in. So like to like set up a base on the Moon and use that as a launching point instead was like what this society did and was like the way colonization like went forward.
Yeah, I actually heard about that. Because they would end up using the Moon as sort of a pit stop just to get anywhere else because, you know, you don't really need much to launch off the Moon versus our atmosphere.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's actually what NASA was saying is one of the biggest reasons why they want to use the Moon as pretty much a pit stop. So because of the decreased gravity, it just makes it so much easier. And it's not even just launching from there. The Moon's actually a really good body in space for us to use as like a slingshot to get to another part of the solar system. Rather than just go straight from the launching from Earth, and then let's say we want to go to Jupiter, one of its moons, to study it, we would actually be using so much more fuel and resources to go just have a straight beeline towards that that planet, as opposed to using the Moon as a slingshot, because that would give us so much more speed and energy for us to utilize rather than waste a lot of our fuel just to get out of Earth's atmosphere and then straight there. So I did mention that one big way for the colonies to fuel their facilities and their research would be solar energy, which, you know, makes sense, you know, looking at it, especially like here on Earth. Solar energy is, you know, it's growing exponentially every year. You know, a lot more countries are adapting towards it, and it's becoming extremely popular. But the biggest issue in space is, one, if you were to colonize a place like Mars, Mars actually has a lot of meteorite impacts, and that would increase the amount of maintenance that is required for these solar panels. So you would need a large team of trained astronauts / engineers to maintain the solar panels. And on the moon, like I mentioned before, it does have 14 days of sunlight. But to contrast that, there is also 14 days of nighttime. So we don't have the solar technology to really harness enough energy in 14 days to have it last for another 14 days after that. Maybe if our solar technology gets to that point, it could be feasible. But at this point in time, it just doesn't make sense. And what's really looking like the more realistic at this point is either going with some sort of like super batteries that we can charge and just keep sending out into onto the moon or whichever colony it is, like mega batteries that can hold charges of for like literally years on end. I think I read somewhere there is different types of batteries that other companies are developing now. Like one charge will last, I think it was like a month or two. And that's just like a small, I think the battery's probably like the size of your phone, maybe even like half that size. And it's insane. The thing is, we don't see it right now is because it's super expensive to manufacture and just not realistic at all for commercial sale. But if it does become cheaper, that might be the better alternative. And another alternative a lot of people are saying is nuclear power. And right now, so we use nuclear fission, which does generate a tremendous amount of energy. But the one problem, well, not just one problem, there'd be multiple problems of maintaining it, because obviously if there's any sort of like mechanical failure or user error, there could be an explosion of some sort or a meltdown, like the Three Mile Island here in the United States, or Chernobyl, or something over like in Fukushima in Japan. That could pretty much obliterate the colony in one event. So that might be something that these researchers and organizations might want to stay away from until we can actually guarantee a very, very small chance of any type of error or meltdown happening. Another thing I wanted to mention as well, too, aside from using Mars or Moon as a colonization location, is there's this station that was an idea of a station developed by a man named O'Neill, and they called it the O'Neill stations. People have seen different concepts of it in different artworks, movies, video games, and these are pretty much just like huge stations floating in outer space. They're usually round or some sort of ring, maybe like a sphere, and there's just it's just artificial habitats. And that could actually be something that is realistic further down the line. Maybe after we do settle down and colonize properly and get it so to the point where these colonies are self-sufficient, that could be the next stepping stone for us to possibly leave our solar system and go to another one. Obviously, with the speed that we can really achieve with our stations, it would still take many, many years to reach any other actual solar system. But that's something that could be done with maybe like a handful of generations, maybe a couple dozen generations down the line for these stations to reach other destinations. So we got all that stuff, all the important things that we need, right? We got our colonization down. We got the logistics on lock. We got our power. We got the power down, efficient power. We're self-sustaining on these on these colonies, right? What happens after that? And that's a big question. Obviously, no one's really thinking that far into it. And there can be so many different routes that we can take. Like, what do you guys think that is one of like the more realistic approaches we can have towards further exploration after our colonies?
Are you talking about solar first, or I mean not solar? I'm sorry.
No, not first. No, I mean like if we already. Yeah, after we've already colonized, like whether it's
you get a settlement.
Creating the moon as a pit stop and settling down on Mars, or it doesn't matter. It's just from where these organizations are already looking at their missions, where their eyes are set on. What do you feel like is going to be the next step, or what's going to be the next mission for these organizations?
Well, really, I mean, if you're still focusing on those colonies, you want to make them as sustainable as possible without needing, like, you know, outside resources. Right. So after that, even. Okay. I would say exploring, you know, the rest of our solar system, because we still don't really know everything that's out there. They're suspecting, you know, like, I believe Europa has like a ton of water underneath. Well, that's like their theory, but, you know, imagine if there's life underneath that. Could be interesting.
That'd be crazy. What if we explore Europa even more? We send actual probes down and we find that like underneath all that ice is like some like underwater civilization of like advanced, I don't know, mermaids or some shit like that. Like, wouldn't that be fucking insane if we came across those type of people?
How far away is Europa?
I'm not sure. Yeah, it's Jupiter's moon. So it would take, I think the one probe that we sent there, probably it was sent like in the 60s or no, in the 70s. And it took probably like 25 to 30 years, somewhere around there.
So then to me, it seems like the next step after we colonize these closest to is it's a speed issue.
Yeah.
Right? Like we can't take 30 years to send a mission out to go colonize something, like unless we have like amazing technology to the point that like we can set up insta colonies, like the way McDonald's can set up an insta McDonald's restaurant at this point. Like, like we need an insta colony.
So like a little bundle. You should just plop it down on a planet and then it just fucking builds itself.
Pretty much, like, because like it's gonna take multiple trips to colonize the moon or colonize Mars, and like so much to do. It's gonna take many years. Now imagine if it took us 30 years each time we had to send something out. That's just, it's not possible, like, to actually build something there with that much of a distance. 30 years is a long time. And, like, they have to be self-sustaining for 30 years after we initially send the stuff. Like, there's a huge gap. And I feel like the speed is going to be a huge issue before we can colonize further.
Well, the thing is, that 30 years is with technology that we had back in the 60s and 70s. Imagine with the technology that we have today. I mean, I'm sure we can shave off at least a few years just for the trip to Jupiter and maybe even to the end of the solar system. Because I think, what was it, like 2 years ago or something, our Saturn probe just actually left our solar system or the influence area. I forget what they called it, but it's like pretty much the orbit. And it actually is now in deep space. So
it seems like based off what I'm reading, NASA's going to send another probe towards Jupiter, and they said with today's technology, it will take 6 years to get there.
See, like, that's so much better. That's more than double half the time that it took previously.
Well,
still, so at some point, speed will be an issue. Like, even once we get out of our own system.
When we're looking at, like, other solar systems that we can, like, we're potentially, like, thinking about visiting, then yeah, speed is going to be an issue. I'd be like, the more important technology that we would be focusing on is some sort of like, I mean, for lack of a better term, cryogenic sleeping, or some sort of hibernation state that we create where people can slow down their metabolism, slow down their aging, and spend 50 years, 100 years in hibernation and only age, I don't know, 5-10 years, and then go from there.
Well, going back to like the speed thing, it looks like New Horizons made it to Jupiter in like about a year, I guess. And I mean, really? The whole mission was to get to Pluto and beyond, and it got there in about like 9 years. So we've definitely like advanced quite a bit on that front, but we can do even better, I feel like.
Another thing to note, though, is New Horizon was a probe, right?
Yeah, it was like just to take photos, I guess. I'm pretty sure.
So like, yeah, like that's like, so one thing to note is these spacecrafts that we're talking about, they don't have huge amounts of weight on them. They don't have hundreds of people living on them, or even dozens. They don't have anybody living on them. So it can really, you can go at certain speeds that is possible for inanimate objects, whereas it's not, it's not possible for humans to go. It's just too much. Our bodies can't handle it. So realistically, like what Emmett was saying, if it's like 6 years for that new space probe that they're going to send out, maybe with humans on board, maybe it'll take twice that time because they have to slow it down. So that's another thing to keep in mind. Yeah, so I personally feel like, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but so I feel like once we do have our colonies self-sustaining, that it would be what I just mentioned before about hibernation. We would start sending out probes, more sophisticated probes, to outside of our solar system. And obviously inside to explore our solar system even more, because we're constantly discovering new things in it. And so we would also do research on outside of our solar system, look for potential candidates for other space colonies, maybe even other places for us to even live permanently. And at the same time, we would also be studying some sort of hibernation technology to help us get there in a more realistic manner.
So it seems like it's going to be the thing that will be holding us back after the first immediate colonizations will be both speed and how do we get people to survive those speeds.
Yeah. And like if we do skip the hibernating route because of maybe some complications with technology we just don't know enough yet, we could also go with what I was saying before about the O'Neill stations, where we'll literally create societies on these huge mega structures in space. And then use these spacecrafts to travel to whatever destination. And then these people will be living on artificial lands with artificial gravity. Because I think with like O'Neill, I'm not sure if he was an actual scientist or not, but he had done his research. And these spacecrafts, space stations, he said would have to be constantly rotating on an axis to create artificial gravity for us. So even though we're in deep space, we would still feel like we would still be able to walk around as we do on Earth, as if we had gravity. So I think that we could have it where, you know, maybe 3, 4, 5, maybe a dozen generations live on these space stations until they actually get to that planet that they're looking for, the solar system, whatever it is.
It's like that spaceship in Interstellar, or the station is like spinning.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing is, the director, he wanted to try to make it either the director or the writer. I can't remember who it was. One of the two.
Christopher Nolan.
He worked with a lot of different scientists and physicists to actually get the authenticity down of like the actual what they're trying to do with a space station, like you were saying, because they had to rotate, which created artificial gravity. And then also with the wormhole, obviously we don't understand wormholes enough to really give a definite answer on how it would be, but with what the data that we have come up with, he made like his best guess. And at the same time, if you guys watch the movie, the shot of the black hole in the movie, that was actually very, very accurate to what we mathematically calculated what a black hole would look like. And it turns out this movie came out many years, or it was like 2, 3, maybe a couple years before 2014. And then we had the first photo of the black hole a couple years after. And it was very similar from the movie to the actual thing. And which blows my mind. Like this Christopher Nolan or the writer, whoever it was, they took their time just to make sure that they got as realistic as they could to nailing down these black holes, the space stations, even the colonization part of the movie too. Like, that was another thing I was going to bring up, how like another choice between from a hibernating and just having a multi-generations living on a space station would be where we create artificial pregnancies, you would call it. We would have pretty much send a couple of humans onto the planet that we're trying to colonize, and then we would have surrogate mothers, and then they would be artificially impregnated, and then they would just carry these babies to term, and then from there they would spread and colonize even more. So that's one way. I mean, there's so many different ways that scientists are coming up with, and I feel like really all of them really sound realistic, and all of these are doable.
Wait. This whole surrogate mother thing. You gotta pause there for a second. But this is really like, that really took like the autonomy out of people talking about it like that.
I mean, obviously there would have to be some sort of legal grounds and like laws put in place where it would have to be voluntary. Like, it can't be like some like Black Mirror shit where like prisoners are forced into this shit, or people that commit like heavy crimes or some shit like that. It would have to be someone that willingly wants to do this.
I feel like a baby like developed on like a different type of gravity or some shit would just like be like deformed at birth or some shit like that. Like, I don't know if that would be realistically possible unless
there's
we find like an Earth like planet
on Amazon that talks about like people who are born in outer space and like their bodies collapse when they feel gravity on Earth. Like, it's too strong for them and their lungs will literally collapse on the show because like they're not made to handle this. It's called The Expanse. Great show. And it goes over into stuff like that, like what it's like to be someone who's born in space versus someone born on Earth. And it goes into like, I don't know, like even the way human women, you know, like we give birth relies on gravity to a certain extent for like the pushing and everything. So it's definitely something like an issue that we don't quite know what it's going to be like.
I think that also applies to like a lot of everyday things that we just take for granted as normal. So I don't know, like I just feel like gravity would be like one of the biggest factors into trying to adapt to another planet when you colonize it, because it might be like an issue on some planets and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. Like, I mean, I feel like if that was the route that human civilization was going to be taking, where we had surrogate mothers, that possibly, like, by the time that comes along, we would maybe have some sort of, like, perfected, like, cesarean section type deal surgery where it's virtually harmless. There's going to be no complications. I mean, who knows? Like, I mean, all of this that we're saying is just all, you know, what we think is just all different ideas that keep popping into our head. But I mean, it can go anyway, really. Maybe even a different technology comes up and all of this stuff that we're saying doesn't make sense anymore.
Right. But then again, like, you still, like, if you want to make a colony that's like sustained, you're going to have to eventually like have kids and shit like that.
That's true.
Just to keep it going.
And on the topic of just exploring the different solar systems and different planetary bodies, on the off chance that we happen to not be the only living creatures that have some sort of reasoning or consciousness, like at our level, what do you guys think would be the immediate response as a society to an alien life form? Like, if we like were like, hey, here's these creatures, this other life form, they come and they're trying to communicate with us. You know, what do you guys think are our world leaders? Maybe even one world leader if we become some sort of, you know, space empire. Like, what do you think our response would be?
I think they would have to, because definitely like a large group of people would like pressure them into doing that. Because like if you get a message from space, imagine like if you don't answer, there's going to be like an outcry from the public to at least like see what they wanted to tell us or some shit like that.
I mean, who says we haven't already? You know, you got that Area 51. Right, well, you know, we've been contacted and the government just hides it.
Yeah, there's a lot of people like that believe that we've already, like you're saying, encountered aliens. And like in modern day time where we can actually communicate with them. And there's also a lot of people that obviously there's no evidence for this, but they feel like people theorize that aliens could have already visited Earth, but at a time where we were still a very primitive society before we even were a civilization. We're just maybe hunters and gatherers. And then once the aliens came with their super high technology, they were just like, they looked at us and like, there's nothing here for us to really gain. We don't want to disturb this ecosystem that's still growing. And then they just leave us be, take note of it, you know, planet Earth or whatever they named us is, has this, this, and this, maybe visit back in 1,000 years or something like that. So I feel like that's an interesting idea to really to think about as well.
Yeah, no way to prove or disprove that, I guess. Like,
it's true.
Unless cavemen made like a drawing of a UFO on the wall, there's no real way to tell if aliens ever visited or not. Or if
actually,
even...
you know, my free time, I'm gonna look that up. Maybe if there's like some sort of like caveman drawing of like a saucer in the sky or something like that.
But even then, like the idea that it would be a saucer is sci-fi.
Bro, we had footage leaked of a UFO.
I feel like I remember that.
It was like some military footage or something, but I don't even like. People didn't even care because you know it's 2020 and we got so much shit on that. Like when they made it like official.
UFO is just sort of defined as like unidentified flying object.
Right.
So it doesn't mean that it thing came was from like outer zooming space. Though. It was, but it could also be like secret military tech from another government that like
exactly.
Used, so. It could be.
I think that's the main reason that a lot of people don't really. Well, they kind of brush off that some sort of like unidentified aircraft in the sky that's zooming by as it not being actually extraterrestrial. Rather, it's just some sort of super, you know, high tech stuff that another government, maybe even our government, is testing. Which, I mean, honestly, that's probably the more realistic, idea or realistic stance on all these unidentified aircrafts.
Yeah, honestly, I feel like once there is like a sign or maybe like, you know, there's a possibility that somebody is out there, like people just like freak out before even making like a rational conclusion. So I think I forget when this happened, but somebody sent like a radio signal out to space and a couple seconds later, like they sent it into like an empty part of space. And a couple seconds later, like, they got a signal coming back, and everybody started speculating, like, oh, who the fuck sent that signal? But turns out it was probably just, like, deflected off of space debris or some shit and just came back to Earth.
Yeah, so I was going to say, like, because if it's an empty part of space, like, who knows what's there? It could be something, like you said, that deflected off, like, an asteroid or a planet that we haven't identified yet.
I mean, we're also assuming there are other life forms. You know, like
I believe, dude.
There's the concept of like the Fermi paradox, which is pretty much like there's no reliable evidence aliens have visited Earth, and everything we observe in outer space reflects physics and everything in a way that is untampered. So like the way we see stars explode and the way we see with the black hole and everything, it's as if everything is uninterfered with. Which makes it seem like if everything we look at is in a natural state of being untouched, right? But there's supposedly these highly advanced extraterrestrial life forms. Why is everything we see look untouched? And so...
It's true.
Yeah, that's sort of the Fermi paradox.
At the same time, there's also other theories that we're still a very young civilization in the... like. We're probably one of the youngest civilizations in the universe where there could be other alien life forms that are in our position, maybe even more of a primitive position as well. And then they just haven't been able to, like us, explore outside of their own solar system. And even if they maybe, and even if they have the chance that they're at our position, like they would still not be able to go any further. Because realistically speaking, even if like what I was saying before, the posing the question of what we feel like, what would, what's our next step after we successfully colonize and become self-sustaining on those stations, we would still like, they, even if they, the aliens are there, they would still need to advance even further to realistically explore as well. So maybe if a light alien life form is like 1,000 light years away, that's an extremely far planet or solar system. We would never, like realistically speaking, we will never reach a solar system that's 1,000 light years away. That would literally take, like the most realistic way for us to do that would be probably through like some sort of hibernating technology, or like I was saying with the O'Neill stations, how we have multi-generations. Literally, we would have to have probably hundreds of generations live in outer space until we even reach that destination.
Yeah, we're not even like anywhere near close to light speed, of course. So you just got to multiply that number by quite a bit before you get your
exactly
estimate. And yeah, distance definitely plays a huge part into this whole space exploration. And like also... I don't know if you guys seen that rock, or it was like an interstellar object that entered our solar system called Oumuamua a couple years ago.
No, what's that?
It's like this weirdly shaped, I guess it's a comet or an asteroid, but people are thinking that like it's just like not from around here because it's just so odd. So obviously people thought that it might be sent by like some more advanced civilization, just because like the way it's shaped, it's just not natural. So imagine like that was sent like millions of years ago and it just reached us now. That'd be kind of weird. I don't know.
It is interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's not it does make sense that if it was to come out of a solar system, it's not like other, you know, asteroids, comets and whatnot can't enter our solar system. It's, you know, that's very likely for things to happen. And also, another thing that I kind of should have mentioned before, too, especially when we're doing, like, more research and probing out into our solar system and even beyond, is that we're actually getting a delayed, we're getting delayed information from throughout the universe. You know, like, for example, the sun. The light that we get from our sun is actually 8 minutes old, because it takes 8 minutes for a direct ray of light to go from the sun and hit the surface of the Earth. And the sun is already a few million miles away from us. So imagining planetary bodies and solar systems that are even further than that, even like one light year away, that would mean that if a solar system is one light year away, that means that it would take the light from that solar system to hit the surface of the Earth in 1 year. And so that would mean, like, and the thing is, like, in 1 year, so many things can happen. You know, two planets can collide. I mean, it's probably, it takes a longer time for, like, orbiting planetary bodies to really collide. But, like, if you're looking at it from other solar systems that are further away, like hundreds of light years away, like what we're observing has already happened. And we're just seeing the delayed, you know, footage, so to speak, of what really went down. Like that, I think it was back in like the 1800s, some scientists, some astronomers, they observed a supernova. And it was from, I forget where it was. I think it was in the... I forget the technical term, but it's this, the nebula that is where like they dubbed the Star Creation Nebula.
Pillars of Creation.
Yeah, Pillars of Creation, yes. That's what it was. There was like a supernova that happened there, but that place is so many light years away. Like, I can't remember the exact number, but you know, it's hundreds of light years away, maybe even thousands. And that supernova happened so many years, like way before, you know, Jesus Christ was born, way before the Greeks. Like, for all we know, it could have happened during the Greek time, the supernova. It's just that the amount, the light is, has its own limitations as well. So sending out, even when we do send out probes as well, and we do get our data, and we see that, I don't know, the solar system that we observe has a habitable planet. Who's to say that by the time that, you know, we get everything set up, we're on our way, we get there, that it's still going to be the same exact way? Maybe some comet hit it, a mass extinction event happened. Maybe other aliens have colonized it. Like, who? No one really knows what could happen in that time frame. And I feel like that's another thing that a lot of researchers and scientists have to really take into account too, if we were to explore anywhere outside of our solar system.
Speaking of the pillars of creation, I'm pretty sure that they're theorizing that it's actually been like destroyed by a supernova. We just don't know yet.
Really?
Because like a supernova happened much closer to us, and like that was the one that was observed. And you know, the pillars of creation are obviously way further, but like it could have been affected by that. We just don't know that yet. Like, they're speculating, but
I think it was, I know what you're talking about. I read that a similar article there that was talking about it. They said that that supernova is in between us and the pillars of creation, but it's actually closer to the pillars of creation.
Right.
So technically, by the time we saw the supernova, that means, or I think they did some math. So with the amount of time it took for the supernova's light to actually hit us, and the speed that supernovas typically go at, expand at. So they did speculate that it's probably already experiencing the actual effects of the supernova. And that's why scientists speculate that it's destroyed.
Take what we have and cherish it for now. Maybe in 100 years, it'll be gone.
Yeah, and speaking of supernovas, let's talk about how a lot of these supernovas do happen and maybe what the final outcome of our sun's going to be. So obviously, supernovas, they happen because of stars when they reach the end of their life. Not all stars. I think it was, someone can help me out. Was it a white dwarf?
I mean, totally forget the terminology.
Aren't each of those different stages? Like, if you're a red giant, yeah, or it's a white dwarf, like, that's just, like, right, what stage right you're in
as it's a star? It's not the stage. There are different stages, but there's still different types of stars. Not all stars will have a supernova. Like black holes, they were stars, but they never had a supernova. And I might be completely wrong about this. But anyways, so obviously stars, they can, once they reach the end of their life, they either will implode and pretty much create a supernova, which is what we were just talking about before with the pillars of or stars, but I can't even remember what it's called again. But so that, like, it's just pretty much it implodes. So it just collapses in on itself, and then it explodes outwards and pretty much just obliterates anything in its path. So if our sun was to experience supernova, then we would be obliterated. But the good news is our star, as far as I've read and all the things I've read online, our star will never reach to the point where it will become a supernova. Rather, it'll pretty much just burn out and then just shrink in size. I believe it will become a white dwarf.
Yeah, I think it's going to expand and then become a white dwarf.
Yeah, according to NASA, it will become a white dwarf.
Yeah, so it's just going to pretty much burn out and then not be able to provide enough heat for any of the planets, I think, further away from Mercury. Pretty much Mercury will be similar in temperature to us.
Well, we're all going to get engulfed. In approximately 5 billion years, the sun will turn into a red giant star, and it's going to reach
Wait, it's going to expand that far?
Yeah, it will reach
It's going to reach Earth, yeah.
God damn,
Well, they don't know for a fact it will reach Earth. They know it will definitely take out Mercury and Venus. And they're debating whether the extension would engulf us or we would be so close that it'd be completely dangerous and life would cease to exist. But
yeah. Sorry, we got 4 billion years, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I was gonna say, like, even, you know, knowing this fact, it's still we shouldn't be scared at all, because it's gonna be happening so we're not even gonna be able to trace our family lineages. Like, that's how far down the line.
We're probably not even gonna have a habitable Earth by then, because maybe it'll be destroyed.
Whether it's because of our own doing or if it's some sort of external mass extinction event, you know, who knows?
There's many ways.
Maybe the core of the planet will burn out by the time that happens. But yeah, there's so many different things that could happen. It's just crazy to think about.
You could go out like the dinosaurs.
Yeah, yeah.
Meteor strike.
So one thing I wanted to also mention about us meeting any type of alien life form, which I feel like is probably the most realistic, if you believe in aliens, is that we pretty much just have a lot more technological advancements that we have to undergo. Because right now we're, for the most part, people, and like researchers, scientists, astronomers, we're really just only sending out radio signals out into space and hoping for a response back. For all we know, other alien civilizations aren't using radio waves. They might be using some sort of other technology that we haven't heard about. And maybe that's why we haven't been able to get any sort of feedback from any other life forms. And I feel like that's probably the reason why we haven't seen any other aliens or contacted any.
You think we're just not advanced enough?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, imagine in 100 years. I mean, that's difficult to imagine. Like, what technology will we have? Maybe in the next 10 years we discover something that, you know, changes the whole game when it comes to space exploration, communication in space. You know, there's so many different things that could happen.
Also, at the same time, they have to keep things a bit limited because of, radiation in space. So when you look at, like, the computers on board of spacecraft, it's like not as powerful as what you would think would be developed by somebody like NASA. So like the Apollo guidance computer ran a chip that was like 1 megahertz, and that shit is hella slow.
God damn.
But
could you give a comparison on like what 1 megahertz is for people who are not as savvy?
So you think about our computers nowadays, a desktop computer averages between 3 and 4, maybe a bit above 4 gigahertz, which is 1,000 times of 1 megahertz. And your phone is probably 1,000 times more powerful than that as well. And it has a lot more memory, of course. And the reason why is because your phone's chip or your computer chip would not be able to withstand radiation out in space. And so they have to build these chips that are like super shielded against radiation in order to work. And of course they have to be very efficient as well. They have to run on like very low power because they're doing these very long space flights. You know, you can't just like put on your Intel on there and just call it a day. You have to think about everything when it comes to how much power it's consuming. In fact, the Orion spacecraft that is like, you know, being developed right now for, I think it's Mars is the destination or something. It's like a SpaceX NASA collaboration. Their computers run on power PC chips from 2002. So that's like around the same time as like the first iMacs. But they're like single core chips that are just, you know, a lot slower than what we have today, but it's just because of radiation shielding and keeping that stable in space.
Yeah, that's another thing we kind of skipped over. Radiation in space is a huge issue that, you know, we would have to obviously address and try to get around. You know, even astronauts as well. I know, like, when when Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong were on the moon, they had to limit their time outside of the spacecraft because of the radiation. Since the moon doesn't have an atmosphere, there's nothing to stop any of the UV rays and the radiation just coming and directly hitting them. So they would have this, they could only spend, I think they were only allowed outside of the aircraft for like an hour, maybe half an hour at most, something like that. So that would obviously be something that NASA or SpaceX, whoever, would have to address. So go back to whether or not we would meet alien life forms. I feel like if we do meet a friendly alien civilization, that would open up so much, you know, doors for us in terms of, you know, trading different technologies. If they're willing to give us maybe their, their spaceship schematics, maybe show us this new type of element that we haven't discovered yet, maybe repurpose a lot of the resources that we use. Maybe we've been using it incorrectly. So I feel like if that was to happen, that we would continue to be, you know, or we would continue at a growing at an exponential rate. Like with like the whole, like Moore's Law, for example, that's where I think with CPU chips, from the first CPU chip that was created, the modern day CPU chip, every 18 months or so, it would double in processing power. And it's just like it's a curve that just gets exponentially larger. And we're actually getting towards the very end of that, the curve, where we can only add so much, we can only double so our CPUs for maybe a little bit longer until we actually have to look for other means of processing for our computers and devices. And I mean, that's where quantum computing is really coming into play, which once that becomes more developed and commercialized, I feel like that would probably be starting becoming the more mainstream, maybe like obviously in today's society and possibly even space exploration. I don't really know how quantum chips really react with radiation, but I feel like there is some sort of limitation that would be applied to these quantum chips with radiation.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of assumption that these aliens would like possibly be friendly or like trade with us, but like, what would they get from trading if they are so far advanced they can travel in space with these hyper advanced spacecrafts and we can't? Like, to me, it's
maybe
like
out of pity.
A what?
Maybe out of pity, they just see us.
Yeah, they would
like,
have to be
oh,
super generous.
You never know. What if they transcend all like aggression and they're just a very passive and loving and generous civilization?
What if their goal is to just unite the entire universe
under the one single galactic empire?
Interesting theories.
It's like Milky Way versus Andromeda. Oh shit, we're heading towards each other. Watch out.
Oh wait, that's true. Our galaxies are technically going to collide one day.
I think it's in like, it might be in like over a trillion years.
God damn. That's crazy though.
Isn't there a point where all stars will eventually die out and all of space will be pitch black and everything is over?
Well, there's multiple theories. There's that theory. I think they call that like the great burnout or something like that. It's something along the lines of that. And there's also the other theory that the universe right now, from what we've observed, the universe is expanding from the central point that we haven't really been able to observe. And that possibly at one point in time, they're going to lose all their momentum. And then they're going to eventually start coming back to the center point of the universe.
It's just going to restart.
Yeah, it's pretty much this exactly. It's going to be the Big Bang just repeating constantly.
Or they're going to expand so far out that I forget what exactly it was called, but basically it would be like the heat death of the universe and everything would just be like frozen still. I don't know. It's just weird theories. That one's scary though.
That's what I was thinking of, the heat death. That's what it was called.
Yeah, there'll be no longer any stars in the skies or anything. Everything will be completely wiped out.
That's crazy to think about.
So even like if we colonize and do all of this, if that theory is true, eventually there is an end.
I mean, there's always going to be an end for humans, no matter what. I feel like even if we get to the point where we can pretty much like constantly keep repairing ourselves and replacing parts that, you know, go bad, that at one point, you know, you're going to tell yourself, you know, enough is enough. Like, I don't want to, you know, keep living for so long. Like, what's the point?
I'm not talking about like one individual, but I mean like human beings as in the universe, like, will one day come to an end. Like, even if we outraced our sun's expansion and explosion, outraced everything, colonized the universe and everything. Like, if this theory is correct, eventually everything will go silent and there's nowhere else to go. And there's nothing else we can do.
What if we are able to get to the center point of where all these solar systems, galaxies and whatnot are expanding, and we find something there?
You just find Michael Jordan playing basketball with some aliens.
Welcome to the Space Jam. But yeah.
I kind of wanted to talk about, like, not just for briefly, I don't want to talk about like the sheer scale of space, because not a lot of people understand how ginormous it is. So we belong in the solar system, and this solar system belongs to the Milky Way galaxy. And in our galaxy, there's estimated to be, like, you know, I think it was billions or trillions of stars. I forget which one it is, but, you know, we have, let's just say billions of stars and billions of star systems. We don't really even know about all of the stars in our own galaxy. Not to mention, like, most of them are probably going to have planets as well in a habitable zone. And even going beyond that, we have billions and billions and billions of other galaxies. Obviously, our nearest neighbor is Andromeda. And that just really accounts for the visible universe, because we can only see so far away that anything beyond that, we just don't know about. And just like, if you think about like our nearest neighbors and how far away they are, the nearest stars to us is 4 light years away. And that in itself is an unbelievable amount of distance. And once you factor in the fact that we're very far away from everything else, you just kind of feel like you're a little bit alone, and we're probably never going to find anything. But I mean, it's still good to be hopeful, and maybe we'll find like some space bugs or some shit, and that'd be kind of cool, not gonna lie.
Yeah, so I just want to, on top of like trying to put our own like ourselves in perspective of in this huge universe scale, I just want to say that it takes about 230 million years for our solar system to orbit the central point of our galaxy. And I think, so what's half of that? Like 115 million years ago is pretty much when dinosaurs were around. So it literally, on the other side of the galaxy, our solar system was on the other side of the galaxy when dinosaurs were still alive. So we haven't even made a full orbit around our galaxy since the extinction of dinosaurs. Like, that's just crazy to think about.
That's crazy. We're so small.
I know. That star that is, you know, what you said, 4 light years away from us?
Yeah.
I feel like that is, you know, still pretty realistic. Especially if we have some sort of, like, game-changing technology to advance us. So I feel like that could possibly happen within, you know, but maybe within even 500 years, depending on what kind of tech advancements that we have.
I think they said, like, right now with the current technology, if we launch a spacecraft in that direction, it would take like about 1,000, I think, to get there. Or maybe even more. I forget.
It's crazy.
Just goes to show, I mean, we've sent the 2 Voyager spacecraft, like, just to make it to interstellar space in the 70s. And I believe, like, one of them is just about there at like the edge of our own solar system. And that's been going for 40 plus years at a very fast speed. And they got like information about the human race on there, including like photos and the golden record, which contains like information that an intelligent civilization could understand, like including like our location and also like, I think it's like a music recording.
Yeah, I think they had a couple of like the popular songs at the time. So if any sort of like life form was to find it, then they could, if they can hear the way we do, maybe enjoy some of that music.
Some bangers on that.
Imagine like some like aliens just like they just put they like figure out a way to listen to it, and then it's just listening to Jimi Hendrix tripping balls on LSD.
It is crazy to think, like, even if like they discover this stuff, will they ever be able to understand it? Like, we struggled to understand the ancient Egyptians and what they were writing. Exactly. The only reason we could even figure it out was because of a Rosetta Stone that had a language we knew on it already, that had the same passage repeated 3 times. Like, how would a foreign life form even like start to learn this language? Like,
is that why that language learning company is called Rosetta Stone?
Yeah, that's exactly why.
It's crazy.
Based off the actual stone. But yeah, so it's I don't know. It's like, will they even be able to understand what we say? Do they even hear the way we do? Even have hearing? Like, did they just, in their development, did they even need hearing to survive on their planet, right? Like, was that an evolutionary adaptation they even needed?
I think we got through a lot of interesting ideas, different topics, explored some very sci-fi aspects of space exploration, colonization, and whatnot, and possible, you know, existence of other life forms aside from us. All these are very interesting. Obviously, none of us know, not even our top researchers, scientists, astronomers really know what we have in store. You know, it's just really pretty much just playing it by ear and hopefully utilizing the technology that we have to its fullest and possibly, you know, figuring out all this new life forms and that we might not have seen yet, different elements, other habitable planets, maybe possibly entertaining the idea of becoming some sort of, you know, galactic empire. Who knows?
Not in our lifetime, though, unfortunately.
Yes, definitely. But I always say, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I always say that I wish I was born at least 100 years later. But the thing is, the more and more I've said it, every time I would think to myself, I'm like, well, if I was born 100 years later, I'm sure I wouldn't be satisfied, or I'd be still doing the same thing with, you know, entertaining different ideas of like technology that might happen 100 years after that. So I'll constantly just be telling myself, oh, what if I was born 100 years later? Oh, maybe another 100 years. Or it was just literally like a perpetual thing.
Right.
I wonder if people in the future will wish they were born in the Middle Ages like some people do now. Like, I wish I could be in the time of knights and stuff.
Nah, you'd be murdered, bro. You got brown skin.
Not me particularly. Well, it depends which empire I drop into.
That's true. If you're like in the Abbasids.
And just a quick note, like, we kind of do take for granted the space-related accomplishments we have in our lifetimes, because imagine, like, 50 years ago, if we told people that we took a photograph of Pluto in, like, high res, and also even got a real photograph of a black hole. Like, those are monumental events, and, like, obviously, most people might take it for granted, but I think it's amazing, and obviously, you might wish you were alive during the space race, but really, we're living in a great time as well for space exploration. And there's more to come in the future, hopefully.
Yeah, I definitely agree. You know, obviously, we've been talking about the future, but a lot of the accomplishments that we have had is very tremendous. And it does aid us in so many ways that, whether it's intentional or unintentional, I know a lot of technology and has been invented out of through experiments that didn't have the intended outcome, but it still benefited us. I think it was wasn't it like the microwave oven? Wasn't that a thing that came out of space technology?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. I'm pretty sure I read somewhere that a microwave was invented with NASA trying to discover some different way for us to manipulate different waves. And eventually just came out to be a microwave oven, and that's how we have it today. Who knows what we have in store with today's technology? You know, something that just comes out today, a discovery, might lead to something else within, you know, the next year that might be super beneficial to us as a society, rather than just only space exploration or anything related to that.
Yeah. I think one thing people in the past would be disappointed about if they discovered our progress on space today is the fact that Pluto is no longer a planet.
Unlucky.
'Cause I remember how many people were so upset that Pluto was removed from the planetary list at the time.
Didn't it go back and forth on the list?
It's a dwarf planet now.
I know when I was in elementary school, we said it was a planet, and then I think in middle school, we were like new information came out. They're like, "Oh, it's just a dwarf planet or whatever. It's not an actual planet." And then afterwards, in like high school, people were debating and arguing whether that it was an actual planet or not. And I feel like it's been in kind of like a limbo state with like some scientists saying it is, some scientists saying it's not.
Well, basically in 2006, it was reclassified as a dwarf planet. But then in 2017, a science group, including members of the New Horizon mission, proposed a new definition of planethood based on round objects in space smaller than stars. And if we use that definition, it would make the number of planets in our solar system go from 8 to about 100. So.
Need a new term for it.
What about round comets and asteroids?
Yes, they would be counted as planetary bodies, according to that definition.
Well, I mean, I guess you can create any definition.
Yes, of course. It didn't say this is like a widely accepted definition, but it's a proposition.
I mean, if there's
So
researches. Sorry, go ahead.
instead of memorizing the few we have to, now kids in school got about 100 to learn. So good luck to them.
Yeah, I know, dude. Like, technology is advancing so fast. There's like so much information for kids to try just digest. I don't want to get political about this, so I'm just gonna end it there.
Well, there's things that we still don't know. I mean, there was speculation that there's a planet even beyond Pluto,
Yeah,
but
wasn't it Cirrus or Sirius, something like that?
I think it's something completely different. But they, like, obviously there's instruments pointed at space and stuff, and they get data through that, and
Yeah.
there's possibly a planet even further, but it's like so far away that, I mean, we don't even know a lot of the stuff in our own solar system. Like, we get like asteroids passing by sometimes that we don't even notice until it's past us. So there's a lot of
Yeah.
information that we don't know.
It's a lot more we will learn as time goes on.
And I'm excited to
Especially if
see
one
it.
actually hits us.
A planet hits
And we'll
us?
know. Like an
No,
asteroid or
not an
something.
asteroid.
I mean, I feel like we
So.
have the technology to really see if something's coming directly at us, and so we can take some countermeasures.
There's been some near misses that we only found out after they missed,
Are you serious?
actually. Yes.
Wow, that's crazy.
So, I mean, life as we know it might just end out of nowhere. Like, I don't know. We just got to take it for granted
Maybe
or
there's
not
like
take it for granted.
a black hole that's just floating around, and it's just gonna eat us up any minute.
We're going to start with this theory now, too.
Nah, I'll just leave that
Should probably leave it there.
there. All right.
All right.
We had a really interesting discussion on this.
It was fun.
Yeah, I really enjoyed
Space,
it.
the final frontier.
Is it the final frontier? Maybe we have more dimensions to explore. Parallel universes,
Underwater,
the
the
final
final
frontiers.
frontier.
That's true too. Water's another, maybe on another podcast. Water is an interesting, well, the oceans obviously is an interesting topic too. There's so much to go in on. But yeah, we'll just end it right there, guys. We've been the Deep Thought Podcast. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you guys have a great day. Bye.
Peace.
Peace out.